Hello, and welcome to the Games About Glory. I'm your host, Milo, and joining me are Ram and Simon. Hello, chaps.
Hey, Milo.
Hello.
Welcome back, Simon. So there's the big news. We bring back the big guns. It's good to have you back. How are you doing?
I think this is a nice, a very wise choice by you. I'm ready, and I'm here to entertain the crowd.
You're Twitter's biggest evangelical, aren't you? You've been lauding the big man for a while now, so it's...
I have been balls deep in propaganda and propaganda these past days, and I don't regret it, despite all the new haters. But I'm really excited. It's actually not just for clout; it's for it's a genuine excitement for the first time in months. It feels like.
I look forward to hearing a bit more about that. So, as we've said, we've got a new manager, so we've rushed to the studio to have a chat about them and find out what we can expect, or have a chat about what we think we can expect. So, as announced earlier today, Ange Postecoglou has joined the club on a four-year deal. He joins us from Celtic, where he won the title twice, the Scottish League Cup twice, and the Scottish Cup in a two-year spell. Before Celtic, he managed Yokohama Marinos in Japan, where he won the J-League. He's won the Asia Cup with Australia, beating sunny South Korea in the final. He's won the A-League four times, twice each with Brisbane Roar and South Melbourne FC, and the OFC Champions League with South Melbourne, and a sack of other titles with the Australian national youth sides. Plays attacking football, high press. He's tactically astute. Players and fans love him. This is what we've been craving after 4 years of counter-attacking and tough love. So, guys, what do you think of the appointment? Are you excited?
I'll go first, Simon, if you don't mind, just because I feel like I've got...
Oh, I don't mind.
I've got quite limited knowledge on old Ange, and I think you'll be able to teach me a few things throughout this pod. So what do I think of this appointment? I'll tell you what I thought when his name was initially mentioned, and over the last few weeks I was pretty underwhelmed, mainly because I didn't know anything about him. So I just thought, well, that's the barometer for me at the moment because of the managers we've had recently, you know, even though it's been very limited in terms of success. But, you know, normally you know a little bit about a manager when they're coming in. But I've got to say, over the last, you know, since his name's kind of really come to the fore, I've just done a bit more reading about him. And mainly I've listened to people, probably like yourself, Simon, and Milo, who do know a bit more about him. I've listened to what Celtic fans have to say about him. I've listened to what people in Australia have said about him, when he was managing there. And now I'm excited. I'm excited now because I feel like he could be just the tonic that this club mm-hmm. needs. And he comes, I think it could actually be a big positive that he isn't coming with a big reputation, and he is coming with somewhat something to prove.
What do you think, Simon?
As I mentioned, I'm really excited. I think you kind of have to go back a little bit and to deconstruct why he's a good choice to actually understand why at least I think he's a good choice. So we come from this period of playing a certain way, this mm-hmm. very win now mentality. Mm-hmm. But big name coaches like Jose and Conte. And to me, even though I think a lot of people feel like that was a misstep, if you give the club credit, I think there was a logic with Jose in 2019. We had a squad that had just been in the final. We had a lot of players in their prime, Kane, Son, Jan, Toby, Eriksen, Dele, and so on. And so having a strategy of winning now made sense. That failed. Then we had that whole kind of mess up with Nuno, where we went from one strategy to another, but eventually we came back to the same strategy. What's changed now when Conte came in was that the age of the squad and the makeup of the squad had changed. We still had Son, we still had Kane, we still had players in their prime who we desperately wanted to give this win a trophy moment to. Lloris is someone I forgot. Mm. Now, Conte failed as well. So at this period of time, you have to look at where we at. We have a squad that's, you know, built for one thing. Clearly the fan base and the club is not culturally fit for what we've tried to do last couple of years. We want to totally change where we're going. Go from this negative, you know, more physical style to a mere possession-based, attacking, forward-going style. Mm-hmm. And so you have to look at the squad and you go, okay, there's a obvious rebuild here. Mm-hmm. And any coach that comes in would have the negativity to deal with, you know, the development of the academy part to deal with, the transition period of, you know, finding the right players and you know, basing us in a new system. And looking at the options we had, I thought Poch and Nagelsmann were perfect for that. They were experienced. They had the right, you know, mentality. They play a fun type of football. I thought Poch was the best choice, not only based on the fact that I love him and we all love him and he understands and knows the club, but also because I thought he could do something with this mishmash of squad. I thought he could service Kane and Son and develop youth. He didn't happen, okay? Now we have Nagelsmann, still a great choice. He didn't happen. Then you have to look at lesser choices now. We're talking about Slot, Endike, Zerbi, Amorim, and so on. And when you look at those names, you realize that because they're lesser names, they will all work against the grain. They will, every one of those names will both not have the pedigree in a way where they're given patience. And I started looking at it, who could do what we need them to do on the pitch, but also sustain those bad times? Who has the skill to bring this club together, to get the fans on side, to represent the culture we want? And that's when Ange started to perk up as like a much better choice than Slot or Zerbi or Amorim, because he plays such exciting football. He's such a big personality. He's positive. He has experience rebuilding squads and rebuilding clubs. Yeah. And I kind of felt like he was someone that could sustain a period of bad time when you have to communicate to the players, to the club, to the fans, where we're going, what we're doing, and why it's not working, and so on. And I thought, that's something that I really missed with Conte and Jose and Nuno. Bad communicators. Mm. And for when we're a club with basically no communications going towards the fan, that coach needs to have that Poch personality, charisma that we can gather around. And that's why I really think this is a great appointment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite interesting. You know, I think you're right when you talk about that rebuild, but I think also when you look at the candidates that we know we looked at, so, you know, Nagelsmann, we know that we talked to Slot or his people, you know, we know that we've talked, you know, obviously talked and recruited Postecoglou. All of them, in terms of their playing style, not identical, but there are a lot of similarities there. You know, we're looking at managers there that are close or you're kind of emulating, you know, Pep's style effectively, which, you know, both, you know, the team that won the Premier League and the team that came second in the Premier League were built on similar foundations. I think, you know, when you look at that, I think as a recruitment campaign, I know that everyone's kind of lost their shit when, you know, Nagelsmann announced that he wasn't coming, you know, the Slot deal fell through and he stayed at Feyenoord. But actually, I think there's some consistency there in the approach. We've looked for players who, you know, managers who play in a certain way. And I think it's also interesting when you look that it also looks like we're trying to emulate Man City off the field as well in terms of our structure and how we're setting ourselves up there. So I think there's an idea there about what we're trying to do. And, you know, realistically, when you look at the clubs that are run best in the Premier League, you know, Man City, Brighton are, you know, the two that stand out, you know, iffy money aside and stuff like that, in terms of their operation, they're really smart. So it makes sense to me, I think. And in terms of Postecoglou, you know, he wasn't, you know, like you're saying, Simon, I think Nagelsmann and Poch were my first choice, but I also wanted a manager who was going to be able to fit into the structure, because I think the problem we've had over the last few years is it's been built around the personality of who's in the dugout. And I think, you know, as a club, we've lost our identity. We need to establish a way of playing. And, you know, this is how Spurs play. And this is our transfer strategy. These are the type of players we sign. And once we've established that, then actually choosing managers, choosing coaches to fit into that is going to be a lot easier. And, you know, that's what we saw with Brighton. You know, Brighton lost Potter, who's, you know, the most successful manager in recent history. They replaced him with someone that very few people in this country had heard of. And they've got better. And we need to get ourselves into that kind of position. So, Simon, have you watched, or, you know, I know you know a bit about his teams. Have you watched much of his Celtic? I mean, what did you think of them?
I mean, I started watching Celtic, you know, a couple of weeks ago when he was one of the five choices. So I wouldn't say that I'm a big fan of Scottish football in general.
Yeah.
And I also started, you know, doing the research and, you know, reading scouting reports and watching highlights from Japan and documentaries and stuff like that. And you pretty quickly, because he does play this similar style to Pep, and we pretty quickly understand the basis of his tactical, you know, approach, which is, you know, back 4-3-3, back four, inverted fullbacks, a lone pivot, 6-2-8, that basically live between the lines. And then in Celtic, from what I understand, it's a little bit different because he has a striker that was basically, because he defends from the front and the team presses really intensely. The striker had like this big focus, Kugo, I think his name is, to press and be a hard worker, grifter, run a lot, but maybe not the most involved player on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically two wings that play really wide to stretch the opponent and then basically create chances 1v1 against the opposition fullback. And that's, I mean, carbon copy to what Poch does, Arteta does, to some extent what Slot does.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I say that pressing particularly, I mean, obviously after losing the ball, presses very intently and then drops into a 4-4-2 to defend. Yeah. And then and the front two will press. So very, very aggressive. And it'll be interesting to see.
I mean, it's so aggressive. It's I think, you know, Poch, early Poch is something people might, you know, could give a reference to on when it comes to Spurs. It's really aggressive because and a really high line. And I mean, in terms of, you know, what it does to our squad, you could theoretically see a couple of our players succeed in the system. Yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll come back to that.
Ram, no, I'm just going to say it's a different way. So,
Ram, have you seen much of his teams? Or
I haven't seen too much of his teams. I've more read than seen, actually. Yeah. But from what I've read, it does kind of remind me a little bit. And Simon just alluded to it now. You know that those Poch teams where we obviously played and we dominated possession and we played on the front foot, but also when we broke, there was like eight players running at the opposition, you know, so that it wasn't just like if you think about what's been happening the last couple of seasons or three seasons where it's been like we break and it's like, well, we need to find Kane and then hopefully someone's running on. It was like a wall of white coming at you. And I love that. I loved watching us play then. And so if it's anything like that, and I think also like, you know, the last few teams that won the league, when you look at Liverpool and City, they're the two kind of standout that do that 4-3-3. Liverpool, you know, as well, now haven't necessarily had when they had Firmino, who was someone who works hard, who helped the team around him, but didn't necessarily, he wasn't a 20 goal a season striker, you know. That to me is all positives, because if we're trying to emulate teams that are winning the league and winning Champions Leagues, and I'm not saying we're going to do that, you know, straight away or maybe not ever, you know, I remain positive, but if that's the direction we're headed in, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of attacking, you know, that 4-4-2 defensive shape morphs into a 2-3-5 effectively, with Simon was saying you've got two centre backs, you know, the fullbacks tucking in to join midfield, and then number eight pushing up to join the attack in the half spaces with the wingers wide. There might be different ways that we use that. With Porro in the team, you probably don't want him in central midfield. That doesn't seem like a great use of him. But there's, I think you'll see the shape will be that. And that back line is going to be in the opponent's half in most of those games. Mm. So, but
The update I would say on Poch and Klopp, and I think Klopp has updated on himself, is that inverted thing where you know Trent starts to drift inside and become a midfielder. That's the difference from Poch Spurs, where, you know, the fullbacks are really up wide and crossing. Here it's more like they tuck in and become midfielders, and then, you know, the wingers go wide and you can play.
So are we saying Emerson Royale Emerson yeah, exactly. Royale is going to be our midfield general. I love it. I love it.
On that, I mean, he did play more centrally under.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
For a little while, and he did pretty good.
I mean, after Benton Kerr got injured, particularly those games against Milan, he was tucking into midfield to help Saren Skip, and we saw that more. And obviously, he's not great sticking wide. He wants to come inside, so that is something that we saw him do. I mean, I think where someone like Emerson Royale is going to suffer is that, you know, in the use of the ball and that quick passing. You know, he's okay in passing safe and things like that, but he's not really particularly good in kind of aggressive use of the ball. We're not going to make all these changes in 1 year, and I think in the short term, he's probably a player who's useful. Sorry, Simon, you're going to come in.
I mean, no, I'm just going to say, like, to tag on what you're saying is, like, the big, you know, thing is your defenders have to be really good on the ball. Your goalkeeper has to be really good on the ball. And what's interesting about him, and I'll read a quote from him when we start talking about the more what we need to change with the squad. He has really interesting, you know, philosophies around positionless players, and he wants everyone to be able, you know, in his ideal setup, everyone can play pretty much a little bit everywhere. And that's everything is about, you know, how do I keep possession and dominate the game that way? And it's the total opposite from this very static way Conte played out from the back. Like, it's these patterns that are really rigid. This is the opposite. This is, you know, really good players. And how do I solve for overloads? How can I make sure that there's always a player free?
There was a really interesting interview with, I think it was De Bruyne a few weeks ago, where he was asked about training under Pep. And he said the two things they train most are goal kicks and pressing. And he said they don't do much else. And goal kicks is because that, you know, it's how you play out from the back. What's the structure of that? How do you move that forward? And pressing, because you have to do it as a unit. And you can't, we saw that when we had a go at pressing in the odd game this season. And it's, you know, if you don't do it as a whole team, then you leave yourself exposed. Yeah. And I think you probably find something similar with Postecoglou. And, you know, say, Simon, let's morph into that question around how well we think the squad fits. Because, I mean, the obvious thing to me, other than maybe the fullbacks, and I think maybe the number eights, they're all a bit, there's probably not enough goals there at the moment.
Can I read the quote just before we move on? So, because we're talking about it?
Yep, go on.
This is what Ange says. The more I can free players from positional constrictions, the happier I get. But the crazier it gets. Can I get players not thinking they're midfielders or defenders or attackers? And can we get our game even more fluid? Experienced players tend to know the pitfalls of football. To convince them to take risks can take a bit of time. Whereas young players are like a sponge. They don't know the pitfalls of playing out from the back. What conceding from that feels like. They are braver. So that's a little bit about his ideal. And I think, like, that's what Arteta tries to do. That's what Pep tries to do.
Yeah.
So that's what we're facing, guys.
It's total football.
Total football.
In terms of the squad fit, I think, say, other than those positions, I think the other one that springs up, obviously, yeah, the back line, we're going to need some pace. If we're pushing our centre backs up past the halfway line, I can't see any of our centre backs other than Romero being comfortable with that.
That's the only player that naturally fits into being comfortable on the ball, being comfortable under pressure, being quick and strong enough, and have the intelligence to see counters and being able to step up. So he would need maybe more of a sweeper defender, really aggressive. Still a really fast, strong player, good on the ball, good under pressure, a lefty preferably, young, preferably somewhere, you know, close to Romero, so we can partner them for the next couple of years. And then there's the fullbacks, and I think this is going to be the big discussion. I mean, we have the keeper, obviously, but that's just, you know, it's a Raya, it's a Sanchez or someone like that. But when it comes to the fullbacks, the only player that's really maybe suited for the inverted fullback role is Udogie.
Yeah.
Because he likes to play more centrally. He likes to tuck in. He likes to do that more than he likes to go out wide. He likes to drive towards the box. He's really good on the ball. He's strong. He's fast. He can defend. When it comes to Porro, I mean, I guess he could do that. I mean, he's not bad mm-hmm. on the ball. He's technical, but it's really not his strong suit. He's wide is where he really excels.
Yeah.
So what you can do here is you can keep someone like, you know, Davis and Emerson, and then you can play lopsided where Emerson tucks in when you have Destiny on the pitch, or, you know, Davis tucks in and you let Porro go out wide. But, you know, plays like Sessegnon, Reguilon, Perisic, yeah, I don't see it.
No, I don't see it at all. I think, yeah, and in that system, one of your eight sticks and the Porro pushes forward, doesn't he? I think one of the other interesting ones potentially is whether Deki could be one of those eights in this system.
Yeah, that's interesting. I personally think that he can play, because this is the problem we have. We have inverted fullbacks, and we have fullbacks that don't really fit the inverted role. And we have wingers in Kulusevski and Son, more Son than Kulusevski, that aren't really, you know,
line huggers. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not line huggers like that. They're better when you have them closer to the box. So, and also, what does inverted mean? Like, inverted for a lot of people means, you know, you're a lefty when you play on the right and so on. But here it's more where you are on the pitch.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean, so let's say Porro plays on the right, and he's inverted. He's still right-footed, so you want him to go out wide and cross in. And the same, Udogo is left-footed, so you want him to go wide. But if he's left-footed, you want Gil, who's left-footed too, but likes to play on the left side. You want to have two left-footed players on the... So that's the kind of math you get into. This kind of... like if Son and Kulusevski tuck in, okay, then you maybe want Porro and Davis, because both of them like to go wide. But is Davis good enough 1v1 to create, you know, chances against players? Not really. Is Son good enough 1v1 to create chances? He's probably better, you know, tucked in and gets to that sweet spot where he can shoot. So it's going to be a math problem for Ange until we fix the squad in a way that gives him more options.
Yeah, I think Son's probably best as a striker in an Ange side.
Because you asked about the eights and the six. This is another big problem. Where, not a problem, it's a sticky situation of picking. So we have the six who has to be really press resistant. And it's almost like a playmaker.
Yeah.
And we don't really have that player. So, I mean, Skip is not really press resistant. Bissouma is press resistant, but I don't know if he's a playmaker. So Skip could probably, you know, learn and become an understudy. But we should probably get that, you know, amazing six. And then you have these eight roles where they can be someone like Bentancourt or Højbjerg or Bissouma, who could do a little bit of both, or Sarr. Or they could be Ndombele and Lo Celso and Winks. Like, in theory, you could have one eight play a little bit more like a defensively and cover up for maybe a Porro when he runs forward. And you can have someone like Ndombele on the other side as a more 10 creator who doesn't do that kind of stuff. So we have basically, what's that, six or seven midfielders where we have to pick who to choose, who to sell.
I have concerns about Ndombele playing further forwards in this system just because pressing, it doesn't come naturally to him. But we've got a squad review at the weekend, so our next episode is going to be that. So we probably don't need to do a deep dive into all of the players now. In terms of kind of Postecoglou, should we be concerned that he hasn't managed in a top five league, or, you know, do we have any concerns about that? Ram, what do you think?
That was an initial concern for me, for sure. But I actually, I did think about that when he was first mentioned and things like that. But you look at some of the managers that have come. Look at Arsene Wenger. You know, as one example, you know, who's come from, who did good things in the Japanese league and then came over, you know, and even Poch, you know, he did obviously go to Southampton, but he was still a relative unknown in terms of, you know, when he came to us. So I'm not concerned anymore by things like that, because I think history has proved, especially recent history now, there's been a number of managers that have come through, you know, I'm not just talking about us, but in general, you know, in world football, that have come through from nowhere and, you know, and kind of made a name for themselves, and they haven't necessarily had to you know, like for example, you need to start in the Premier League with a lower to mid-table club and then work your way up.
Yeah, and I think, like, I mean, everyone was getting, you know, hyped about Vincent Kompany. Everyone was getting hyped about Slot.
Yeah, exactly. Gallardo.
Gallardo, so yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't managed in a top league. And I think find people who take unusual paths interesting. Yeah, I mean, Graham Potter, you know, where he was managing university sides and then, you know, abroad and then, you know, has come back through Swansea and, you know, Brighton, what have you, I think is an interesting career path.
He coached in my country, in Sweden, yeah, which is... such a bad league.
And, you know, I do wonder whether, you know, some of the kind of more hyped kind of ex-players who go into management, if they started off where Postecoglou started off, if they had the same background, where would they have got to? And I think, you know, it's taken him a long time to get here because there aren't many job opportunities for Australian coaches. You know, the same as we've never seen an African coach, you know, managing in, you know, major European leagues. And that's not because there aren't good coaches there. It's just because there aren't the opportunities. And, you know, so I think it's interesting he's taken this path. And I think, you know, he's going to have different experiences and different views to maybe some of the more obvious, you know, people who hung up their boots 3 years ago and have landed, you know, walked straight into a decent job and, you know, they'll be coming in kind of second job. That's kind of my view, I think. Simon, what do you think?
I said that at the time. I think how you process his career basically probably has to do with your life experience. Like, I'm an immigrant. My mom's a nurse. Like, when I try to get through as a TV producer, I didn't know anyone. I had to work a lot harder, take the long way to get, you know, to those rooms where I had an opportunity to succeed. And I think if you had that kind of path, and, you know, there's thousands of versions of that path, you kind of understand how closed off an industry could be. And I mean, the European League, I mean, basically every coach are from these five countries.
Yeah.
And they're ex-players, they've been in the industry their whole life. They, you know, they have a friend and own agent, or they're friends to a friend to a friend. So if you come from the other side of the planet, that's the path you have to go. And if you started to coach in 9 to 5, when we didn't even have the internet like now,
yeah.
I mean, you know, we didn't even know that there wasn't an Australian league. How were you supposed to get a job in 95 or 2001 or 2005? I mean, now is when it's, you know, was the last year was the first year we had an American coach. So that's one part of it. And the other part, when it comes to, you know, being worried about his you know, his qualifications, I mean, I've said this before here when we've talked, it's, to me, it comes down, yeah, I mean, when if that's your worry, you have to explain to me, you have to break it down, like, what exactly is it that you worry what you're worried of? Because to me, there's a plan and then there's execution. And to me, you know, proof of concept, he's shown that his plan works.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go, okay, but Celtic are dominating in the league in Scotland. Yeah, that's because he had the players that were better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I when I posted that, for those who don't know, I posted a clip of them playing Real Madrid and them, you know, basically having the better of Real Madrid for the first half. You saw the plan works. Why they lost 3-0 is because, you know, the execution isn't, you know, we would have scored 4 goals that first half. But then, you know, Madrid are just better in the end. So they win the game. So I think, like, if you poke in those kind of arguments pretty quickly, it just comes down to feeling. Like, it doesn't feel good.
Ram, what
that,
do you think?
Yeah, that's it. I think all we can go by is what is where he's been and what he's done in the leagues that he's been in. And he's been an unequivocal success everywhere he's gone. So just because he doesn't have, you know, the Hollywood lights of Premier League or Bundesliga or Serie A or whatever, you know, the fact is everywhere he's gone, he's made a massive contribution to the club he's been at, and he's made a difference, and he's changed, you know, he's brought his style in, his culture, everything that he wants his team to be, how he wants it modelled, and it's been a success. So that's what we should be basing it on.
Yeah.
You know, in any other industry, it would be the same thing. You know, like, you kind of go, well, he or she has come from this organization and this is what they've done, and then they've moved to that one. It doesn't necessarily need to be a big name organization. You know, you look at the person, the individual, and see what they've done.
If anything, it's the other way around, right? It's like he succeeded despite all the obstacles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, that's what we need. I mean, I said that today. Like, we're a club. Like, a coach nobody believes in, coaching, leading a club nobody believes in. It sounds perfect to me.
Yeah.
I mean, when he again went from the academy to first team, people said he wasn't good enough. When he went to Australia to Japan, people said he wasn't good enough. When he went to Japan to Celtic, people said, fuck who? Who?
Yeah.
And he's proven over and over again that he can do it.
I mean, I've been doing research on this, and I can tell you that the ball is still round in Scotland, and they've still got 11 players on a team. And, you know, this is the kind of detail. But, you know, and I think, but you know, I've heard people saying, oh, you know, Steven Gerrard was a success in Scotland, or, you know, Brendan Rodgers was a success in Scotland, or what have you. But I think what's different here is that he's astute tactically. And, and I think the tactics transfer because, firstly, you know, we've said the top two teams in the league last season play very, very similarly to how he wants to play. And he's doing smart things there. And I think that transfers. And what's more, he's doing smart things with players who aren't as good as he'll be able to get in the Premier League. So if anything, he should be able to, you know, if he's got lesser players playing in that way, and that's what he's done all the way through his career, when he's got better players at his disposal, he should be able to do more.
Exactly. I mean, and also, I mean, this is such a lazy comparison because you have to look, what was the state of Celtic when he came in? How quickly did he change it? How did he change it?
Yeah.
And how did he succeed? And, I mean, that's the actual, you know, context of, you know, assessing.
But also in terms of kind of how they've played, I think the Celtic team last season was the highest scoring Celtic team since the 1930s. In terms of like goals in the league, so it doesn't matter that they're in a
Celtic before he came in ended up 20 points below Rangers, so that's the distance.
Okay. Final question before we go, and I think
I feel like we should have had someone that's really negative.
Is Ange the right person to make us fall in love with Tottenham again? Ram, are you ready to fall in love?
I'm ready to fall in love. I think that he is, from what I've heard from fans of Celtic, I think he could be the guy. Because all he needs to do is just make us fun to watch again. Yeah. And that's how easy I am. I'm a cheap date.
Did you renew your season ticket?
I did. I waited until the day. I was close. And I was still saying, I'm not going to do it. But I knew I was. So about 2 p.m., it was 5 p.m. deadline, 2 p.m., I handed my money over.
Fixtures are out next week.
Yeah.
Be interested to see who we got. Simon, are you ready to fall in love?
I mean, I'm dangerously in love. Is that the title of the song?
Well, see,
I said it like this. I said, like, having a calming, positive presence, a former academy coach, player developer, elite talent spotter, at the helm during a transitional period, I mean, to me, it's starting to look like a carefully considered decision. And that's how I feel. I feel like he can't lose, really, because even if he ends up being here for 2 years, he's the right coach for this moment in time. And I just want to underline this, him being a great communicator and human being that we can all kind of, you know, get around as a club and is what I feel is the most important thing. Because I think that's what we need to sort out our identity, who we are, you know, outside the pitch for it to even start to work on the pitch. So, two thumbs up for me.
Nice.
Based on the most recent occupant of our stadium, I think we're all going to be crazy in love, aren't we, by the autumn?
Going to lose 10-5, but it's going to be a beautiful game.
I love it. That I'm happy with that.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks, Milo.
We'll be back as usual next week to review our squad, do a bit of a transfer window preview. And now we've got a manager, we know what we're actually looking for, a slightly better idea anyway. So it's going to be easier. Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you then. Bye.
See you guys.